The Truman Show is about a man whose entire life has been the subject of a reality TV series, completely unbeknownst to him.
I mean, you gotta see Truman Show. I mean, it's one of those films, right?
The more you are engaged in it and the more that you go into the world, that you just get so much more out of it.
It's kind of a prison break film if in The Shawshank Redemption, Andy Dufresne didn't realise he's in prison till about an hour in.
So this is a film that is immensely rewarding the more times you watch it. There's just something really timeless about it, and yeah, I would recommend it to anyone.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah, a big fat five.
Hello everybody, welcome to Flix Watcher. Joining us today we have Al.
Hello.
Camille.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Yay, hello.
And we're here today to review The Truman Show. Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello and welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Al and Camille. If you would like to say hello and tell our listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
I'm Camille.
Cool.
And no, I can say more. I thought we were going to do like a thing. It's like, I'm Camille. This is Al. Anyway, I'm Camille.
When you say you thought you were going to do a thing, was that planned or were you just like sending?
No, I thought we were synced by now, but okay. All I'll right. just, you know, I'll just do it separately. I'm Camille. I'm the producer of Script Apart, and I'm a filmmaker as well. And this is the host of the show.
I'm Al. I am the host of Script Apart, which is a podcast about the first drafts behind great movies. I'm also a journalist, and I write for The Guardian and Empire and Little White Lies and whoever else will have me.
So we're big fans of a Script Apart. It's meticulously well researched. We had Black Klansman. We reviewed that Black KK Klansman, and I wished I'd have listened to it before we did the episode, because then I would have picked up some of your excellent research and used it in the podcast and passed it off as my own my own information. But how do you go about kind of making the decisions about what films you look into?
So the research is kind of my bread and butter. Just as a journalist, that's something like that's part of my kind of day job, I suppose. And yeah, it's very, very time consuming, sort of delving deep into these screenwriters' stories and the sort of larger stories of the film. It does take quite a while to kind of like prep every episode. And part of that process is, of course, like reading the early draft scripts that these screenwriters kindly send over. So yeah, it is a long process. In terms of picking the films, it's a pretty democratic process, and like, it basically involves me and Cam on a WhatsApp thread being like, do you like this film? I like this film. And it can be literally anything. I mean, yeah, sort of like the run of episodes. I don't know exactly when this episode's coming out, but like the like upcoming episodes that we are recording or have recorded include 10 Things I Hate About You and, you know, all the way to kind of like Zodiac, the David Fincher film. So there really is like nothing that there's no constraints on it. It's just basically, do we love the film, and is there like something to be learned from like the story of its creation, I suppose.
And so you said, sorry, go on, Cam.
I was just going to add that sometimes the ideas for the films that we pick come from other videos or like watching like a documentary about the making of some film, and then you hear a crazy story about like how, I don't know. I mean, I wanted to get Oliver Stone on this because he like did so many films, wrote so many of his films on cocaine. I was like, dude, we got to get Oliver Stone. Obviously, like getting Oliver Stone is a little bit tough, but like sometimes it's just watching another video, you know, listening to another podcast, and oh, that's a crazy story. And maybe we can get that person behind that to, yeah, kind of get come on the show.
And when you get in contact with the guys, do you, the writers, do you suggest the film you want to talk about? So for Barry Jenkins, you asked about Moonlight rather than If Beale Street Could Talk.
Yeah, so usually you know, I send a pleading email that leans heavily on the fact that I've either profiled that person before, or like we've met and worked together in some capacity, and yeah, sort of, or they've just, sometimes they've read my stuff elsewhere, so there's a little element of trust. They understand that we're you know, we want to talk about, we've picked this film that we want to talk about because it's the biggest of your work, and we want to like attract the most people because we're a charity podcast, we're trying to raise money for like causes that we care about. So yeah, for the most part, like we just sort of like say, and sometimes it's a case of like they push back and they're like, oh, I actually feel more kind of passionate about this project. And in those cases, sometimes we just record both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about the charity aspect of things, by the way, because that's a part I did notice from your show. So which charities do you support?
So we support Black Minds Matter UK, which is a charity that provides therapy in the UK to like people who otherwise may not have access to it. Mm-hmm. We also support the Film and TV Charity, which yeah, is any kind of film industry person who's been affected by the coronavirus crisis.
Yeah.
And we also split our like earnings, income, whatever you want to call it, with yeah, NHS charities in their sort of COVID-19 appeal.
Yeah, so please donate, guys, and enjoy the show.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, donate. Tell us where at the end, well, tell us now where you can donate to, how we can donate to you guys, because I think that's a super important thing you're doing, especially as we're recording this today, we're finding more and more about the film industry going,
yeah,
or at yeah, least the screening industry taking a big hit.
Yeah, you can donate at scriptapart.com. There's a big button to donate, and then you just do it via PayPal. It's really easy.
You can't miss it. It's out there, you know.
Okay, Al, we're here talking about your film choice, which was The Truman Show. Can you tell us, first of all, why you chose it, and then a synopsis as concise as possible in a minute or less?
Yeah, sure. So I picked it for a couple of reasons. Number one, I don't think any movie, with the exception of maybe The Matrix, which came out a year later, I don't think any movie has broke my brain as massively as The Truman Show did when I first watched it. I was like 10 and my dad came home with a DVD of it. Sent me into a bit of a spiral. But yeah, there's also, so there's a personal attachment, but also in terms of Script Apart, this is kind of a movie that's important to our origin story. So it felt like a good one to pick. Yeah, it's kind of where the podcast came from in a way.
Well, you're gonna have to explain that.
I realized that halfway through saying it, then realized I was gonna push over my minute.
I was like, go on, Al.
So basically, The Truman Show, like at the beginning of lockdown, I came across like an early draft of the film, which is written by this New Zealand screenwriter called Andrew Niccol. And it was really, really different. So much darker, with lots of key ingredients just unrecognizable to the film it became. And there's some really disturbing stuff in there where like Truman kidnaps a baby and tries to drown his wife in a bathtub. And it's set in New York rather than in this like sort of idyllic kind of bubble that has been created for Truman. And I was absolutely fascinated with that sort of initial vision for it. And the idea was like, I really want to speak to Andrew Niccol about that first draft. And kind of, yeah, I sent it to Cam and then we were like, there's actually a podcast in that. So like we haven't actually managed to ever get hold of Andrew, but yeah, the podcast very much came out of this script is so different and it went through so many changes to become the film that everyone loves today, and they're all wise changes. I was really interested to know, and like, yeah, what was the process of getting from point A to point B?
Well, do they love it? We're going to find out in this discussion.
Yes, I've made a few presumptions there.
You have them. So can you give us a synopsis, please, Al?
Yeah, sure. So The Truman Show is about a man whose entire life has been the subject of a reality TV series, completely unbeknownst to him. He lives in this world created entirely for him, populated entirely by actors. Pulling the strings is this mysterious media mogul called Christoph, who wants to keep Truman in this massive TV studio he's built for him. Truman, though, over the course of the movie, begins to suspect that all is not as it seems.
That's fair enough. Helen, Cam, what are your thoughts on Truman Show?
So I love this film, and I don't like Jim Carrey. When this came out, I kind of was sort of like, do I want to go and see it? Because I don't really like his comedy stuff. And I went to see it and loved it, and now I will watch Jim Carrey if he's being kind of serious. But yeah, I think it's great. It's fascinating. It's interesting what you're saying about Andrew Niccol, because he did the script for Gattaca as well, which we've had on. And I just really kind of like his future visions and how he thinks that maybe the world could look in the future, even though I'm saying that this has kind of got this real kind of like 60s, 50s throwback vibe. So I love everything about this.
Yeah, I like this. Like, I love this film. And it reminds me of, yeah, when I was a kid and it was like in that run of films, you know, it's Truman Show, Fight Club, Being John Malkovich, Matrix. And I was like, wow, you can do different type of stories. You know, it had such a futuristic idea of our reality and everything. I mean, I view it differently now, but I still love the film for what it is. And like I'll mention, it has a special place in my heart because of the origins of our podcast. Right now, at this point, I'm much more interested in the Andrew Niccol version of it than in the film that we have currently. I mean, I love it for what it is, but I kept thinking, rewatching it now, I just wish, you know, that version existed somehow.
See, so, yeah. I don't. I'm very much the other way on it. Like, to me, what I love about this film is it's so uplifting, and it's like, it's weird. It's like an uplifting drama. I find it, I think maybe the score partly is like, has that effect on me, but like, to me, it's like The Shawshank Redemption. It's uplifting in the same way The Shawshank Redemption is, because it's actually a pretty similar movie. Like, it's kind of a prison break film if in The Shawshank Redemption, Andy Dufresne didn't realize he's in prison till about an hour in. It's, yeah, it's, there's something like really uplifting about like a story of one person, like, yearning for freedom and then achieving it.
So what Cam, when I guess, who do you think would direct the version of the first draft of the script? And then a question for both you guys, in reading the first scripts of the films, are you sometimes like, oh, we should, how often do you ever, or if ever, do you think, I wish you'd actually just filmed this first version because it sounds a lot better?
Exactly. I mean, it's funny they asked me who would direct it, because I was thinking who would be there rather than Jim Carrey, because I don't think Jim Carrey works for a darker version. And but now that I think like someone like Spike Jonze or something at the same time, they're giving that gritty quality that would being John Malkovich had in a way, where it's like, you know, if we, let's say we are setting it in New York, then he could create maybe like a darker version of New York, something a little bit more abstract but familiar. And if I can't answer, because Robin Williams was in talks for this part, and then I would love to see a combination of Robin Williams doing a darker version of Truman Show with Spike Jonze at, you know, the height of his youthful power, you know, doing it. Because in a way, it's such a Kaufman-esque idea, you know, like, you know how we had like Syndic Dutch in New York later on and stuff like that. So if you if you had that early script, maybe it could have been something darker and weirder in a way. And now it's just much more like a 50s postcard, which is also cool, but it's a different film.
I think I'm based on a couple of things you said. I watched it when I was 10 years old. If I'd watched this at 10 years old, I think my head would have fallen off. but I watched this at the cinema when it came out, and haven't watched it since. But I remember leaving the cinema and was just freaked out. Everything suddenly became like, could this kind of happen, and then there's a few things happened. There's this TV show on Channel 4 where they did like a fake shuttle ride, and they got lots of people in, with the prize being that you're going to ride the shuttle to the moon, and it's completely faked, but everything about it was like they went through all these stages, and all these people genuinely believed that even though they weren't astronauts, they were going to get in a space shuttle and be rocketed up to the moon. And this thing really happened. And I followed it day by day. I was just like, how can you do this? But it's true, because they picked the people who are most suggestible, the people that had least experience on, you know, physics and things like that. And they found four or five people who generally thought they were going to the moon. And it's kind of insane. But obviously Truman was picked as an unwanted child. So he had no kind of reference in time. But I just kept on thinking this kind of thing really could happen somewhere, that someone's life is just completely controlled by.
Well, there is something called the Truman Syndrome, where people are actually believing that they're living in a reality TV show like Truman is since then. So I guess it's probably had a bit more of an effect on some people than everyone else. Most people go, yeah, it's a cool movie. Every now and again, someone goes, Well, you know, maybe it's me. Maybe people are watching me.
Me, specifically.
Yeah.
Is that extreme narcissism in a way, or?
I don't know. Probably a little bit of craziness thrown in.
I mean, these days with social media and all that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think there's worse things than Truman Show, to be honest.
Well, it's worth actually flagging that this, yeah, not only predated social media, which, like, the films unintentionally make some really interesting sort of observations about, obviously it was so before the time of social media, it also like completely predates reality TV. I think the first series of Big Brother was like another 2 years away at this point. There's something just so interesting about like the things that it foreshadowed, and to watch, like, one of the things I love about this film and that I love about coming back to it again and again is like I always discover something new. Or like the lens of the time that I watch it through, like, so right now in a time of like Instagram, like my response to this film is totally different to how it was 10 years ago watching it in a time of reality TV. And that response was totally different to how it was another 10 years prior to that when I was 10 and just like losing my brain over this
how
film.
How old is this film? Sorry.
It's 1998. Okay. Yeah, 22. Yeah.
I was going to say. But yeah, I think that's the thing. If it was to be made now, I don't think it would have the impact that it did, because people would just be like, yeah, I mean, I can see that. That's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, 1998, I was 18. I was first year at university. Like you say, Big Brother was either the next year or the year after that. And I had a phone, but it was the worst. So just people weren't as connected, and we weren't watching people in the way we do now. Be it TikTok or reality TV or Instagram, whatever. But if this was to come out now, I think it would just, it wouldn't, part of it is the impact, is the shock of like, could you imagine this happening? And now it'd be, yeah, I can imagine it happening. I can wholly imagine this happening. It probably is happening somewhere. Genuinely probably is happening. There's 7.5 billion people on this planet. Some people are playing with other people's lives in this way, I'm sure.
People are doing it willingly, right? All the vloggers, some people are vlogging each day of their life, you know. And I think if, like, I agree with you, it wouldn't have the same impact. And if we were just thinking about the film being successful, you know, like, and not being a flop on based on this concept, again, it would have to be a much bigger concept film, maybe a TV show. Like, you know, the TV series, you know, where you can go deeper, like kind of Westworld, you know, who's behind this. And that's kind of the feeling I had rewatching it, you know. It just, at this point, I'm kind of like, I kind of wish I knew a little bit more about Christoph. I wish I knew like more about the production of the show, you know, and how it worked, you know. And my favorite bit in the film is actually the montage of how it came about and his whole life up until that point, you know, when they explain what Truman Show is. And yeah, the more I rewatch it, I just kind of find myself more intrigued with the concept in a deeper way.
Yes, it's interesting you said that. I mean, this film is one of the ones where you start digging into the trivia. It's incredible. Like, there's so many things that could have been. And I think in the original kind of scripts and concepts, there was a lot more of kind of the background on Christoph, and there's, you know, a lot more going into it as well. But there's all kinds of stuff, like Dennis Hopper was potentially in line to play Christoph, and parts of Truman were sort of based on Michael Jackson, and there's quite a lot of Jim Carrey improvisation, like the opening scene and the bits where he's kind of talking to himself in the mirror. And I think that kind of caused a little bit of friction with Peter Weir at the time, because they obviously have different styles, but in the end they kind of overcame it to bring together, which I think is probably the best of Jim Carrey, in that he gets to... it's really interesting that the roles that I like him the most in is where he's kind of sad, and you can tell that he's really not happy. And that's when I like Jim Carrey the most, like this and Eternal Sunshine. And I think he's really good at doing that. But then also he has kind of like the funny, silly Jim Carrey kind of wackiness in there as well. So I think his performance in this is really great. And the supporting cast as well, like Laura Linney, I really love her. And this was the first time that I'd seen her in this. And I just think everything really comes together.
It's really interesting with Jim in this film. Like, he was obviously like on a massive hot streak at the time, and there was no doubt like a commercial reason why he was cast. But there's something about like his performance. He does have to downplay some of like the high wire craziness that he was really known for and that he brought to roles like Ace Ventura and The Mask. But I think in this role, a lot of that nervous energy kind of like makes sense with the character. His kind of like slight hints of insanity, they like it makes sense with this guy who cannot shake this feeling that something isn't right, that something is fundamentally wrong about the world he's being asked to exist in. And it just like it's like a nice sort of synergy of his normal kind of flavor as an actor and like who this character is. I can't see another actor nailing it in quite the same way.
I would like to see Robin Williams do this, because in the same kind of way, when Robin Williams is on point comedic, from a comedic point of view, he's outstanding and no one touches him. But also when he does the serious stuff, he's still like, oh shit, Robin Williams can do drama. Mm. And so when you see actors that have that dual side in this, it's interesting. So it would be interesting. And with Cam, I'd like to see the Spike Jonze, Robin Williams in the dark, like set in Hell's Kitchen, like horrible place in New York. I'm not talking Manhattan here. This is like horrible. Baby stealing version.
Can I throw something out there though?
Sure. So,
you know, when I definitely not. But you know, when I talk about how sort of like the fascinating thing about like going to an early script of the Truman Show, in the Truman Show first draft or early draft, he was pitched like much older, and he was like the character was meant to be, yeah, actually kind of around that age that Robin Williams would have been at the time, like much, much older, like sort of like late 40s, early 50s, I suppose. And in terms of it being like that ending, I think what's uplifting about the ending in the film as we know it versus if it had been the original draft and it had been this older character, like when Truman gets out at the end, there's something, he's got his life ahead of him still because he's still fairly young. Whereas like when I read the script, that small detail of like other characters a bit older, it just plays like a tragedy at the end because his life has been robbed of him and he's like well into middle age sort of thing. So yeah, I think Robin Williams, I'd love to see him in it, but I'd like to see a younger Robin Williams. I think like one of the like small details that they got right in those sort of subsequent drafts was making that character a bit younger. I think it really is the key to the ending working.
And I like a lot of the other aspirations to kind of modern life now, like the consumerism aspect. I loved how each time, you know, you'd follow the same path into work, you'd meet those two kind of very similar looking guys, they'd push him against this wall, which happened to have an advert on it. And you could just kind of see Christoph's mind or the producer's mind saying, right, he's hit that mark, that's £1 million or whatever, how much they're hitting. And then the things about everything you see in the Truman Show is for sale. You can buy his clothes, you can buy his board. Yeah. All this kind of stuff is just like, you can see all these different cogs going into it. And that's what makes it a lot more terrifying in a way. For me, this was this fully sustained, horrible kind of beast, not just taking a kid who wasn't wanted and putting him in a Petri dish almost.
It's really interesting you say about that, because when I watched it this time around, it really reminded me of working on Secret Cinema and Back to the Future, where you're like on radios and you're waiting for all the cues and there's things going round in repeat and everything. So that was a different experience for me personally. But it is that kind of, I could imagine myself being in the Truman Show as kind of a cast member, and you'd have your sets and you'd have to wait for your cues and things. And then if something went wrong, it'd be like, oh, cut to this or go to that. So it's a different viewing experience for me.
I did love it when he started to break mold and the people he was interacting with were like, oh shit, he doesn't normally talk to me. I don't know what to do. That kind of stuff was intriguing. Sorry, Cam, I think you're going to say something before.
I mean, you used the word terrifying, and I just thought about the scene that I think it was one of, like, I haven't viewed it in the same way before. You know the scene where his Truman is kind of figuring things out and Marlon takes him out for beers again, and they have that conversation. And from what I've read, there was like the whole thing about Marlon maybe also being an alcoholic in some versions of the script, or maybe with scenes that got cut out, I can't remember. But he does drink in a lot of the final film. I don't know if you guys noticed. He's always got his beers on. He's always
got six beers.
Exactly.
Pristinely lit by the camera.
The scene between Marlon and Truman, when the music really gets darker and he tells him that if everybody's in on this big plot, that you're, you know, something's wrong with this world. If everybody's lying to you, then I'm lying to you as well. And the music gets darker and, you know, that it's just a close-up on Marlon, you know, because he is lying like straight to his face, you know, that this whole relationship we got is fake. And this is the first time I kind of viewed this scene, and it's kind of like, oh, wow, I wish, you know, they kind of went deeper into that, you know, the kind of the relationships he created, what effect that had on those people, you know, in terms of that's his fake wife, that's his fake best friend, you know, psychologically. And, you know, it always brings me back that, like, okay, the film is kind of light. It's deep, you know, and it's, you know, it creates a lot of important questions, but I wish it was a little bit deeper with its characters and what it.
I genuinely think there's something there. Cam, let's get together and make a screenplay for a TV teleplay of this, like I say, along the Westworld thing. Because I was thinking about Laura Linney's character, because that's a dark thing. If she's not in love with this guy,
exactly,
she's been paid. Obviously, when she first started it, she was probably like, yeah, I'm going to be in a streaming show, I'm going to be his love interest, blah, 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 blah. But then, like, at some point, it's like, oh my God, this is wrong. Like, how do I keep sustaining this? And she only stops when he almost, because he flips out and almost, you know, attacks her. And that's that side of the human. It'd be great to see, like, him walking out the door and her just face just, like, falling. And just be like, oh, another day.
Yeah.
It's gone. And that kind of stuff. It's
just a little thing, right?
It must be super interesting.
It's just a little bit, you know, of that. Like, I feel like it's a little bit unexplored in that way.
I think it's, for me, like, I have loved coming back to the film time and time again over the years, and sort of like those things, because they're not left pronounced, like you kind of notice it and your mind wanders away with that thought. And I've spent a lot of time, I love like the subtlety of it, and I like the fact that those things go, they're teased rather than like a subplot kind of thing. I think like there's the thing that unites all the characters here is the same thing that was in The Matrix 2 years later. This idea that there is something wrong about artificiality and a reality that's hollow. And like, it's a tragedy for Truman that he's kept in this cage that he can't see. But it's also like, it's somehow almost even sadder. The wife going to work every day and like having to do this pantomime and like, you know, I don't know, there's just so many little elements of it. Every time that she does one of her product placement things, it's hilarious. At the same time, it's just like this sort of like strained smile just breaks my heart and makes me feel sick at the same time. I don't know, I love all those like touches. I think like a big part of the sort of like enduringness, I don't know if that's a word, of the film is the way that those things are sort of teased rather than like, it gives you, there's so much to explore in the confines of your own head after you watch this film, instead of trying to cram it all in and sort of, you know, elbow out central character in the piece. This is like an amazing film about one person. And like, while the mythology of it's really, really interesting to me, it would be a crime to lose sight of that character. Truman is so endearing and lovable and goofy and stupid. And you want him to get out as he does at the end.
It is like an extended Black Mirror, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like it kind of really reminds me of another film that started out much darker when I was watching it, of Groundhog Day. It's kind of got those sort of similar vibes, kind of the repetition and the slightly sad depressingness, but also played off with lots of comedy and kind of the struggle to kind of get things right in that. But in Truman's case, the kind of like right path they were guiding him on, he just was battling against it.
Here's a question for you, Helen. I'm really glad you brought up Groundhog Day, because from my count, right, I'm trying to think of like films whose name has gone on to like transcend in society and become, if you say Truman Show to oh, that's a bit Truman Show, everyone knows what that means and what that reference like implies. And it's the same with Groundhog Day. And the only other film I can think of that like ticks that box is like Inception. I'm trying to think if there's any other like films I'm missing that like when you mention that it describes such a particular experience.
I think The Matrix is one, or like a particular phrase or someone says it's a glitch in The Matrix.
Yeah. Of course, yeah, that's a good shout. Yeah.
And maybe like Blair Witch for like anything that's found footagey type thing or anything like that, possibly.
Yeah.
And I also have a question. Like, why do you guys think that the concept of reality TV wasn't like, I mean, you got Truman Show, but like the other films that were about reality TV show, like they weren't that popular or big. There's nothing like really bigger than Truman Show with that sort of concept, right? Or am I wrong? EdTV, right? Flop,
that
right?
Came after, didn't it? About yeah. After.
Showtime with like De Niro and Eddie Murphy, like somehow, like it's a little bit like that. But why is Truman Show just the film about reality TV?
I think it didn't just because reality TV took a massive hold.
Yeah.
It was like, well, I can watch a 90-minute, 2-hour film about reality TV, or I can watch these people actually sleeping whilst I should be sleeping myself.
Mm.
Kind of thing. So I don't think film could capture that
but
in the same satisfying way. But I don't know. That's my thoughts.
But in terms of like, if you bracket it with like films about reality, super interesting. The amount of films around at that time, I don't know what was in the water, but like Fight Club is about sort of like your perception of reality kind of being unraveled, and The Matrix, again, same. Truman Show, like existence.
Being John Malkovich as well.
John Malkovich. Like, I don't know whether it was like anxiety about like the new millennium, or like, you know, sort of millennium bug coming up, you know, sort of everyone was freaking out. Or whether it was like computers starting to creep into our lives and us starting to all kind of like spend a bit more time online. But like, there was something in the water around that time. Everyone was freaking out about what reality was anymore. And they were making these films that like have endured in their sort of own separate ways.
Should we head to the scores, guys?
Hello, I'm Sam Pay.
And I'm Martin Zoltz-Austwick.
And we are the two hosts of a podcast called
Song by Song,
where we listen every week to a track by the musical artist Tom Waits. You might know him for his gravelly voice. Very nice. His appearance in films, but also his multi-decade spanning career involving blues, jazz, and all sorts of other kinds of experimental music.
So we're basically like a book club for Tom Waits. And if that sounds like your cup of tea, you can find us at songbysongpodcast.com or wherever you get podcasts.
So welcome to the Flixwatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we'll start with you, please, Al, with your recommendability.
It's a big old 5 from me.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I think it's an absolute masterpiece, and I think it's like weirdly somehow underrated. I can't believe it's not sort of discussed more as like one of the like real kind of core canon, you know, amazing films of that period.
Well, I was just thinking about Peter Weir, the director. He hasn't done that many films, but this is probably this and Dead Poets Society are his outstanding ones, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, that's
the ones
true,
that I've
yeah.
seen anyway. I don't think I've seen his other films.
Master and Commander, what's up? I'm just looking at the list now, but that's I think Truman Show is
the second Master and Commander, isn't it? It's not the first one.
No, that the one with Russell Crowe.
Oh, we did Witness as well.
Witness, okay, what's up? Witness is great.
Cam.
Yeah. 5. I mean, you got to see Truman Show. I mean, it's one of those films, right? And now I want to go strong. 5. I mean, it's just like if you do that, like the list that we've been going through this whole episode, right? Like Being John Malkovich, Fight Club, Matrix, Truman Show is there, and you just got to see it to get the vibe of those times. Of like, I mean, I wish it was made in 1999, the year for movies, right? It just would, fit perfectly, but it's not. But still, it's still around that time, and I just think it, a big fat 5.
Helen?
Yeah, a 5. I think it's brilliant, and it's still could kind of come out now and still be as good as it is. It's just, there's just something really timeless about it, and yeah, I would recommend it to anyone.
I'm going to go for 4.5. Because I don't think, I still think if it came out now, or if you watch it for the first time now as an adult, you'd be like, I think if you watch it for the first time as like a 17-year-old, or 18-year-old as I did for the first time out here, I don't think you'd see the impact of it. But I think if it was someone, you know, our age, 30 to 40, watching for the first time, I think they'd still kind of get it. So I would recommend it differently, to depending on who I was recommending it to. Repeat viewing score, Al.
I would give it 5, an emphatic 5. There is so much amazing detail buried into this film. And I'm still sort of discovering stuff. Like this rewatch, it was like, oh yeah,
oh, really?
He's got like vitamin D supplements everywhere, like littered in the background. Because of course he does, because he's not getting any natural sunlight. Yeah.
Shit.
So
nice.
Yeah, there's so many. And also you can like, sort of spend all day kind of looking in the background of shots for where all the kind of million little cameras are. This sort of like level of detail is such that, yeah, you can rewatch this and 22 years later in my case, still be discovering things and finding those little breadcrumbs. It's so interesting.
Cam?
I was going to give it a 4, but the vitamin D thing gives it 4.5. Because I think like once you know where it's going, you know, when you know that he's just going to go into the wall, you know how it ends. It's just the rewatchability aspect, you know. Like, I mean, yeah, I was just looking at the cameras, where they position. But at the same time, it started annoying me that some of the shots are made from these cameras and the other ones are like as if the camera was right next to them. And I felt like, oh, that's a little bit inconsistent. And and yeah, so I just think 4.5 instead of a 5. Yeah.
Helen.
So this is a film that is immensely rewarding the more times you watch it. And I think this time around for me, it was sort of paying more attention to the people who are watching Truman and sort of seeing like their lives and their backgrounds. Like I love the bar where it's like Truman 24/7 and the people who work there and just all of the characters in there. So I think it's just the more you watch it, the more you will kind of get out of it, for me anyway. So I'm going to give it a 5. And also, I seem to have this memory of it by it being like a 2-hour plus film, but it's actually only an hour and 43 minutes. So it's a lot shorter. I mean, it could be a 3-hour film. It could be much, much longer, but I think the length is just about right for it.
I've only seen, this is the second time watching it, because it did freak me out. But it's one of those films that you have to watch at least once more. So it's going to be high because of that. I'm not sure how often I'm going to rewatch it, but you know, I will. And I can imagine on each rewatch there are layers like that vitamin D is a nice deep cut there, Al. I didn't notice it, but when you said it, I was like, yeah, of course. He hasn't got natural sunlight. This is insane. So I'm going to give her 4. But I do really want to see that TV show, because I'd like to see what the other, you know, the people watching the show as well, what they're getting out of it. That must be an interesting angle as well.
It's sorry to jump in. There's like some of the, you know how they keep cutting to people who are watching it at home, who there are some amazing. Yeah. One of those guys is Scully from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and just I don't know if you guys watched that, but it absolutely killed me seeing it this time.
Yeah, I noticed that. I've got that written in my notes. Scully.
I was also thinking in terms of bit parts. I think this is the first time I saw Paul Giamatti. Small screen score, Al.
So it on one hand is like a very intimate character piece, so you know, I appreciate watching it at home, but as I touched on in like the last category, there is just so much detail in the back of every shot, and there's like a lot of amazing cinematography and just like imagery in this film. Like that last final shot of like him touching, like, you know, his boat hitting the canvas, it's so kind of memorable. I mean, like a couple of years ago in one of Kanye West's mad interviews, he like talked about sort of like the culture being Truman's boat at the edge of the canvas or whatever it was. And I think that speaks to just sort of some of the imagery in this film and how just like long lasting it is. And it's obviously better enjoyed on like a big screen. I'd still give it like a 3, because you could just watch this film anywhere.
I would give it 3 as well. I think I never saw it in a cinema. Never had that opportunity. But I can imagine that if I saw it in theater, that would be a great experience. And like Al said, like the imagery is so big, and I think also it's worth mentioning like the awesome score. And you know, it just makes the films feel so much bigger and operatic in a way. So yeah, I think it's Philip Glass, a lot of it, and then and maybe a couple more composers. So yeah, like I wish I could see it. I think if we could still have theaters right now, it'd be great to get like a you know, another screening of Truman Show, just to be able to compare what I've missed. So, but also a great you know, TV movie also that I would finish if I, you know, went in there in the middle. So yeah, like a three. Yeah,
Helen.
So I love seeing this at the cinema, and one of the things I also loved about it was the cinema poster, which was made up of like the individual shots that made like his big face, which we kind of see a lot now, but like the first time they did it was really incredible. And although I loved it at the cinema, when I watch it now, I feel like I'm like one of those people, like one of the little old ladies on the settee, kind of like watching it live as it happens. So I'm not actually watching the film, I'm actually watching like the Truman feed. So I think because I had the great cinema wow experience first, and then subsequent watches have been at home, I'm kind of happy with that. So I'm gonna give it a four.
I really enjoyed it at the cinema, and like I say, I came out feeling a bit freaked out, but yeah, I think I agree with Helen. It's quite nice being the participant of, you know, the goggle box kind of point of view, being on the sofa watching it. So I'm going to give it 4.1, I think. Engagement score, Al.
Engagement score for me is, it's 5 while you're watching it, and then it continues to be a 5 for like 2 hours after you've watched it. Like, it's so funny, like the way, even the other day when I rewatched it before doing this, like the hours afterwards, I was like, I went on a funny little like train of thought of like, but what if I am? And then I realized that if I actually was being Truman'd, then it would be like a ratings disaster, because terribly boring life, you know, especially in lockdown. So yeah, there's, as we've touched on over the course of this conversation, there's just so much mythology unexplored with this that like your brain can totally run away with you. It grips you while you watch it, and it grips you long after. It's got to be a 5.
Cam?
5 as well. I think I'm still, even when I'm saying that I would like to see the darker version, I think that also means that I'm engaged in that. I'm still watching this film and I'm like, what if, you know, I'm thinking, oh man, do I want to see what's outside when he leaves the door, you know, or like, I'm still thinking about these things. And I just, and also like, just in terms of just the movie being intense, we didn't really talk much about like Ed Harris's performance. And I think Ed Harris isn't great in it. So every time like, Truman is on that boat and he's like changing the weather on him like he's God or something, I'm always like, man, that's some good Harris right there, because he's just like, hit him harder, you know. And like you know, I've seen it 100 times and I'm still just like, oh, you know, that's where Harris goes crazy, you know. And yeah, so that's a definitely like, it's Truman Show, you're always engaged, you know. 5.
Just before we go to Helen, the bit when he walks through the door, I mean, would you want to see more than that? And also, what do you make of Natasha McElhone's character? Because I feel she's a bit underserved in this, or she kind of works as she's almost like a MacGuffin or cipher for Truman to get out.
Al, you want to take this?
Yeah, so funny you should mention that. In the script, in the first draft, you follow him through that door, you see all the kind of like the stage hands and all that sort of thing, who normally just, you know, do their thing around this set, and they're just like, wait, what? And you know, and then he's reunited with the love interest, who is underserved. And you know what, it didn't really, like, on the page it didn't really offer much. That there's something so wonderful about like the film ending as his real life begins, and like you not seeing him step into the unknown. There's just something so poetic and magical about it. And also like thematically, watching this guy on camera who's spent his entire life on camera, there's something just like so satisfying about like us not knowing what happens to him next, because he's a character, he's earned that freedom, he's earned for us not to know the rest of his story. I absolutely love it.
That's very true.
I think it's a perfect ending, and there's nothing better than kind of your imagination of what could be than a slightly underwhelming ending, I think, for that.
Yeah, because what does he do? He goes and shakes the guy's hands. Thank you for filming me for the past 30 years.
Yeah, that's a lawsuit, surely, like one hell of a lawsuit. the rest is just an Aaron. The Truman Show 2 is like an Aaron Sorkin legal battle with him going, what the fuck? You're sued.
So the one of the things that is really interesting and also a little bit dark is the level of commitment they go to, including faking the death of his father to make sure that he either A, never gets on a plane, or B, never gets on the boat. And when you rewatch it and when you really pay attention, there's so many things like all of the stuff in the travel agents is like all really bad news, and she, you know, his wife slips in, you know, stories of accidents about boats sinking, planes crashing, etc., etc. So this film, you have, the more you are engaged in it and the more that you go into the world, that you just get so much more out of it. So I'm going to give it a 5 for engagement.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5 as well. You got to be in it. You got to be in it to win it. It's a great film and it deserves your attention, because I don't think you get anything, I don't think you get as much out of it if you're kind of half-heartedly watching it. And that gives us an overall score of 4.50625, which is a great, great shout. Thank you very much, guys, for picking that. Let's head over to Twitter, where we do give a shout out before we go into recording. So in this case, we shout out from at FlixWatcherPod. We're reviewing The Truman Show with Al and Camille from Ask Scripts Apart. Have you seen the film? Give us your thoughts for a shout out on the show. And we had one bit of feedback. Al, can you see that?
Let's see. Yes, I can. So Alex Elliott said, I was totally engrossed by The Truman Show, and if I was in a bath while watching, I would definitely have jumped up cheering as he steps through that door. 5 good morning, noon, and nights to you.
Fair play.
Couldn't have said it better, Alex.
Al and Cam, thank you very much for joining us. Can you sign up by telling the guys who are listening where they can find you online? Tell us a bit more about the charity that you support, and we'll say goodbye to all the listeners.
Yeah, so you can follow us on, and our podcast on Twitter and Instagram at ScriptApart. You can read up and listen to all our episodes at scriptapart.com, where you can get our podcasts, you know, wherever you get your podcasts. And yeah, if you find what we do interesting or useful in any way, then, you know, it really does mean a lot to us if you're able to donate. We are raising money for Black Minds Matter UK, the NHS COVID appeal, and film and TV charity. So just go to scriptapart.com and there's a big donate button, and you can just PayPal, you know, yeah, it's pretty obvious. You'll figure it out.
Cam, where are you on Twitter?
I'm at Camille Dimek, and same with Instagram. And yeah, thanks for whoever's listening to our show. Thank you so much. There's going to be really cool episodes coming till the end of the year. So, you know, remember to follow us wherever you get your podcast. And thanks so much for having us, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. We're big fans.
Yeah, thanks for using the film.
So much fun.
It's crazy how you guys are just paid actors, and this whole thing is just a part of an elaborate reality TV show about my life. So, great acting, well, guys.
This is an easy one. You know, I don't have to sleep with you. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.